Good morning. We'll go ahead and get started. Thank you for being here so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed the 10 o'clock this morning. I'm Matt Domsch. I work for Dell and have been in the Linux community for a while. I've also had the pleasure of being able to serve on Fedora's project board for the last couple of years and kind of stepped into a larger pile of work than I originally thought when I was running a mirror for Dell. For a lot of the development work we do it on top of Fedora. And I was having a hard time keeping our internal mirrors up to date, and I realized very quickly that we had the same kinds of problems with all of the mirrors that Fedora had. About 150 or so public, and another 150 right now that are private mirrors. And so I said, well, you know what? I'll step up. I'll volunteer to help. I'm sure we can take care of this. And I started to look, and someone said, well, I want to add a mirror. Okay, so I started looking. How do I add a mirror to the Fedora mirror list? Well, somebody, at that point, Seth et al., or one of the other folks, edited 17 text files manually to add that mirror in. Then if a mirror went away for some reason, they could no longer provide the bandwidth, had to go and edit those 17 files again. And when we did a new release, we had to edit all those files again. And it turns out that we were only listing about a third or maybe a half of the actual mirrors in those files because somebody had signed up, but no one had ever updated the files. So I said, well, you know what? I'm sure we can solve this problem in software. And I'm sure it'll just take me a few days. Oh, by the way, I'm going to have to learn Python and Turbo Gears and a few other things to make it possible. I'm sure it'll just be real easy. So about 6 months of night work later, we had the mirror manager in place for the Fedora 7 launch, and things went very smoothly, with the exception of a few data center switches melting. Everything else went quite well. And then Fedora 8 6 months later, and Fedora 9 here just at the end of April. And so mirror manager has been in place as the tool that both keeps track of all of the mirrors that Fedora has and hands out the mirror lists to end users when they click on download a CD, or if you do a yum update, Mirror Manager is the tool that tells those programs where to download the current data. I also happen to work for Dell. I mentioned that I'm in Dell's office of the CTO, responsible for Linux strategy. Fedora is actually part of my full-time job as a board member. I've got some special dispensation to spend time working on that, so I do appreciate that. So if you have questions about Dell stuff, save that to the end. If you have questions about Mirror Manager, hit me as we're going through. So Fedora Mirror Manager's got a very simple goal, which is make sure everybody who asks for bits, Fedora bits or Apple is the extra packages for enterprise Linux, packages that live in the Fedora universe that are made available on RHEL and on CentOS, and similar derived distributions. We want to make sure that we get those bits out. We want to get them to people quickly, because nobody likes slow downloads. And it turns out we've got plenty of mirrors around the world that we can provide fast service for most geography. We want to get them quickly. We want to get them inexpensively. When you've got several million users, if we were serving all of those users out of Fedora infrastructure directly, that would cost many, many millions of dollars a year. Fedora doesn't have many, many extra millions of dollars a year. If we did, we certainly would want to use them on other things than just bandwidth costs. So we want to be able to get the bids out to people inexpensively. Of course, we want to use only free and open source software. Fedora is famous for keeping, philosophically pure, if you will, the only open source free software is included in the Fedora distributions. Only that, to the extent we can, is used in Fedora infrastructure. There are the exceptions, like we don't have the firmware to the Cisco switches in the data center. I'm sorry. But for all the software that Fedora develops for infrastructure, that's all free and open source software. Mirror Manager was going to be the same way. And while it started out as a tool for just Fedora mirrors, it really has evolved to be a little bit larger content distribution system. So it can handle more than just RPM packages and CDs. It really can handle basically an arbitrary directory structure on arbitrary machines around the world. So who uses Mirror Manager? really there's three main audiences. We've got all of the users. We've got several million users around the world. And we know that number based on the number of IP addresses that are hitting the Fedora infrastructure and asking for updates or asking for downloads. IP addresses aren't a perfect one-to-one mapping of users to machines, especially given network address translation, and the fact that some people at home have DHCP that refreshes its address every so many hours or days or years. But it's the best swag we've got. It's a couple million people. We've got, I mentioned, about 300 mirror server admins. Of these, about half are public. I didn't look at the list this morning, but it's right at about half. And about half are private, folks who have a mirror inside of their company, such as Dell. We've got a couple of them to serve our developers. Folks at universities like Princeton that will serve their students and faculty on campus from one mirror. And Princeton, in fact, has a public mirror also they serve content with. But we wanted to be sure that we could handle both types of mirrors, both company internal that maybe we don't have any access to, but we know that they're downloading the content. And then all the public mirrors that are serving the large majority of that 2 million people. And then folks like myself who work on Fedora infrastructure, who want to know who's out there, who has what, and when things break, what went wrong, and how to fix it. So these are the kinds of people that we're most interested in Mirror Manager. I would put a fourth audience, which is additional distributions and additional projects that might want to make use of this in the future. I'm still waiting for folks to step up and start adopting it wider in that respect. So each of these different audiences has a slightly different goal in mind. For our three, the end users, mirror admins, and the infrastructure. End users, they want the current content. They want to know what they're downloading was published today or certainly very recently. They want it to be fast. The faster, the better. If you've got a 10 megabit or the new cable modems in Austin are running at 22 megabits if you buy the upgraded service, which I'll gladly take. They want to be able to use those pipes as fast as they can. They're paying somebody for service. They ought to be able to get as fast service as they can. And of course, they want it to be cheap. Who doesn't? Mirror admins are looking to serve their local users quickly and inexpensively. It's a lot less expensive for a company or an ISP to serve a local set of users than it is for all those same users to download content across their internet pipes. You've got to pay real money for that. If you look at a university, for example, a lot of the traffic that universities are serving these days, by all account, is BitTorrent. I'm sure they're all downloading Fedora CDs. If they had a way to get those same Fedora CDs off of an internal server easily and transparently, so when they click on the Fedora site and say download the CD via download or via BitTorrent, it automatically came off of the local server, then they wouldn't be using any outbound bandwidth or inbound bandwidth on their WAN pipes. So that's the inexpensive part. We've got a couple of ISPs who are run mirrors. UUNet is one fairly large one. They've got, in fact, a mirror farm that serves all of their users with this content. So they don't have to pay peering charges to all of the peers that they would otherwise have to connect to for downloading the same content. So it really can save users money. To selected end users, again, I mentioned the private versus public. In some cases, the university will have big fat pipes like Internet 2 and are happy to serve anybody else who's on Internet 2. But if the users are on or not on Internet 2, they might not want to serve them, because then they have to go across their commercial links. And that costs, again, real money. Whereas Internet 2 is all kind of funny money. Carry only the content they want. Now, this is kind of a historical departure from the way most people do mirroring. If you look at a Debian, for example, an official Debian archive has all of the upstream master mirror's content. You're not allowed to selectively drop out old releases, for example. If it's on the master, you're expected to carry it at whatever size the master happens to have. We've got, historically in Fedora, people will choose what content they want to carry. Maybe they won't carry the PowerPC architecture because you know, let's face it, less than 1% of the Fedora global user base uses PowerPC. So it doesn't make sense to have all of those bits on spinning media around the world. I mean, there are the 1% even in the room. Great. You don't want to have to pay the bandwidth cost to get those bits out to all the mirrors worldwide and pay the cost of having the disks and the bits on spinning media all the time when you know that there aren't going to be all that many requests for it. So some distributions or some mirrors will choose not to include PowerPC. Debug info is another classic example of something omitted. Most of the time, end users don't download the debug info RPMs for doing debugging of crashes. I rarely do. I've got my own mirror. So and by omitting these things, you can save an awful lot of space. So you only wind up needing, instead of the full terabyte that the master mirrors could publish, you only wind up needing a few hundred gigabytes. And then folks want to push over the protocols they're already known or familiar with. We're not asking for any new and special setups. So your Apache or Lite HTTPD web server, your standard FTP servers, and an rsync, if you choose to run it. You can run any or all or none of those, and we'll hand out content to folks. We prefer HTTP for the people downloading ISOs and downloading YUM packages, but we'll gladly use FTP. And then rsync is available for people to do manual downloads, but rsync isn't really hooked into any other tools to do downloads at this point. And then what are we doing here with infrastructure? What the infrastructure guys want to know, well, I mentioned, we don't want to have to serve all of this content, many exabytes. When I calculated in the paper, something like 1.4 exabytes of data for the Fedora 9 release. Serving that would have cost Fedora boatloads of money. And we're very fortunate to have all these mirror admins who are offloading that cost for us. And so we want to make best use of that, those volunteer resources that we can. We want to know where people are. We want to know where the mirrors are. We want to know where the users are. And I've got a couple of maps toward the end, which I'll throw up. World maps that show based on where the mirrors are, and then geographically with a density chart where the users are. It's kind of neat to see. And definitely, there are spaces where we could use some more mirrors, and spaces where we've got some users that we need a lot more mirrors, like say India or Russia, and spaces where we don't have that many users and we don't have any mirrors. And is that a coincidence or is it causality? I don't know. We'll show you those. And then basic questions: what content do you have, and what protocols are you serving that by? And all of this is basically to replace the manual mirror lists that we have been running before. The architecture is pretty much exactly as you would expect it to be. We've got all these end users out there running with their desktops and their notebooks. When someone chooses to download off of an ISO off of the fedoraproject.org homepage or with YUM, those requests first go into a set of application servers that are run by Fedora infrastructure. And those application servers are actually balanced around the world in several data centers. But the YUM mirror list request, for example, will hit the application server. Application server will do a lookup in the database, or in fact a cached local copy of the database for the lookup purposes, and will then answer back, okay, the content that you're looking for is on a mirror over somewhere else. This winds up being a very small bit of data transferred back and forth between the Fedora infrastructure, on the order of 20 kilobytes or so. Might grow a little bit larger with some of the things we're doing. I'll get to that in a bit, but relatively small bits. Then the black lines represent, or the heavy black lines represent the flow of the data itself. And these are much heavier weight transactions, because now you're downloading megabytes of repository metadata, or of packages themselves, or of the CDs. So the app servers know what's on the master servers. The mirrors, masters all essentially push the data out to the mirrors, and the mirrors push heavyweight the content out to the end users. Fairly straightforward. Now in the past, we had users, if you were on at a university or something, and you knew that your university, if somehow you knew your university had a local mirror, you had to go into the mirror list, or into the YUM configuration, and for every client out there, redirect all of these accesses to your local mirror. By adding this extra application or app server layer in, and by adding in some knowledge, so we know in infrastructure, we know what mirrors are out there, we can automatically direct those users to the local mirrors without having any configuration changes on the part of the end user. This is critical. This means that you're going to get the best bang for your buck. We'll talk a little bit about how we do this, but one of the methods is we know we have lists of IP address ranges, network blocks, that each mirror serves preferentially. So the MIT mirrors will serve the 18.0.0.0 network block, you know, those users preferentially. All of those users will get redirected at the local mirror. One example. Any questions so far?
Yeah, but I have one for it.
Yeah.
Do you selectively also pass along the other mirror data for the sake of local mirrors that are down?
Yes, we do. The question was, we return, in fact, a much larger list. Instead of just a single server, we return, it's usually about 30 or 40.
But then YUM fastest mirror, for example, would choose the fastest one out of the list, or?
So YUM has really two modes. It has is this list in ordered mode, or is it in random mode? And up until Fedora 7, the default was random mode. Here's a long list, YUM chooses one randomly. As of Fedora 7, we actually made the change to make that an ordered mirror list. So all of the ordering, I'll get to the ordering algorithm here in a minute, is done on the app server. And so the list that the mirror manager returns is in preferential order. So I mentioned really the couple of ways that end users are going to be downloading content. The first one is when they do the one-click ISO downloads. You go out to the homepage of fedoraproject.org, especially on release day, you know, the Get Fedora button is big. You click it, and it pops a little chooser. What architecture do you want? Do you want the live CD, the regular CDs, DVDs, etc.? When you click download now, what you get is a URL that looks kind of like this, download.fedoraproject.org, and then a path inside the mirror system to the whole ISO. In this case, we actually are going to do a simple HTTP redirect as the answer and redirect you to a mirror. This actually has a couple of problems. We need to try and work out this. Have you ever gone out to SourceForge and you click download, what does it take you to?
Mirror list.
It takes, a mirror list, exactly. Well, it may guess, it may do some kind of lookup and guess where you are and presents you with two things. First of all, it presents you with a web page that says, you're about to download from such and such. Oh, by the way, here's a small ad for our sponsor. And then a little pop-up that has the actual download in it, right?
It actually returns subscribers straight to the mirror without that intermediate step.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I want to learn how to do that.
Pay $30 a year. No, obviously you have a preferred user status and give them the right answer. So you could put a persistence layer in for somebody who hands the right cookie back.
That's interesting.
Problem is, when the local mirror goes stale, you don't want to use that.
Exactly. So that's the catch. What we really want to return is kind of two things. One is a web page listing all the mirrors and where you can download them directly. And then the second thing is the pop-up that starts downloading from the one that we think is the best for you. But if that fails, right now you've got to go back a page and re-click the download link. And so it's not really ideal. Luckily for things like CDs, except for the first hour or so on release day, the mirrors are up to date fairly quickly, and it's not that big of a problem. But it is something we want to try and address, better user experience there.
Just there, you say, except for the first hour, you don't pre-stage your content out to the mirrors so they get the content but can't distribute it yet.
Oh yeah, no, we pre-stage all the content.
Okay, but just the hour.
It takes a little bit of time for all the mirrors on release day to do a resync, pick up the permission changes, and start serving content.
You don't start your preseeding that well ahead of time.
Oh, no, we start it about a week ahead of time. So everyone's seated.
They still take a week to get it.
Everything's seated, but it's not, the directory permissions are locked down, so they can't serve the content.
And you unlock at the same time that you change your...
That's right. We change the file permissions, unlock it. Everybody has to resync one more time. We call that our bit flip.
Yeah, because it's the same thing with DenTube. Why don't you do the bit flip an hour ahead of making your announcement?
You don't want to leak it, you know. It
doesn't matter. The local mirrors split the bot anyway.
And that's exactly right. Russ is right. The local mirrors will...
people
I recommend that, that they flip it themselves. We give them a little at job that says, you know, at 10 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday, please, you know, change these permissions. And that goes very quickly for them. It saves them having to do a whole rsync run just to pick up the bit flip change. Fedora historically has, you know, these kind of funny, interesting release announcements that somebody spends an awful lot of time writing. I always enjoy them. When that gets sent to the various lists, seems to be completely independent of when infrastructure is ready for that to happen.
Okay, we need a bit of cool down.
Exactly. So every now and again, the email goes out. Everyone says, "Oh yeah, we think we're ready. We think we're ready." Oh no, we're not quite ready. But that last message never quite got to the person hitting send on the email. It's all right.
Centos had one of our mirrors flip an image we didn't want to release. He said, "Not our image."
Yeah.
Hexums aren't right.
Yeah. Well, we've had that problem too. With Fedora 9, we wound up needing to respin PowerPC images, and I think one of the other sets might have been x86 64 DVDs. After we posted them all out to mirrors, we found it was critical. It was a showstopper bug. We weren't going to release with that set of media, and we had to respin the ISOs. And in so doing, had to post new content. And so there were a bunch of leaks that got out. It's the mirrors leak, and there's nothing I can do about it. And honestly, I don't want to do anything about it. If folks are so excited to grab the new release of our software that they're willing to go hunting for it and search through 150 mirrors until they find one, and they get lucky that they find it, they talk about it on Twitter and on IRC with each other, fantastic. That's the kind of buzz I want to hear. I'm not going to stop on mirrors for that. But we do try and do a coordinated. So the other way folks get their content is through Yum, and the mirror lists. Traditionally, Yum returns a single long flat text file that just has pointers to the mirrors. And I'll get to our wish list here at the end and some of the code that we've been working on here in the last, week and a half. We're gonna change this up. I don't know if you're familiar with something called meta links. I know some people use it. CentOS has meta links I know of.
We've been approached several times. The maintainer is just a pest.
Yeah.
Made us adopt them.
Yeah. I know OpenSUSE's got them also. I think Gentoo even, maybe the meta link people post the links on your behalf.
They've never spoken to me.
Okay. They've approached me a number of times, and it's one of those, show me the code. If somebody gives me the code, I'll be happy to incorporate it, but I haven't had the time to do it. Well, then there was a thing that came out about a week and a half ago about repository security and kind of got everybody thinking. In this, it was suggested that mirrors could serve essentially stale data to end users. Content that's signed, so they're not being able to put unsigned content on. It did come from Fedora in this case. But it might be 6 weeks old, and that might contain a security flaw that's now been known for about 6 weeks. And in this way, be able to keep users from downloading security updates. This is a little scary. In practice, it hasn't actually bitten us yet, but it's a possibility. So we're going to start using both signed metadata so that that the metadata off the mirrors is from Fedora. Packages already are, so that's never been a problem. But we're also going to start using this new this metalink format to return the answer because it already includes the things that we need, like SHA-1 checksums of the files, timestamps of the files. Metalinks. I'm sorry. Thank you. Metalinks is it's basically just a big XML document that lists all of the mirrors for any piece of content, and you have a tool. There's a Firefox plugin. there's a, you know, five or six download accelerators, and the problem is the only folks really using it right now are download accelerators. So I don't really want, our mirrors don't really want users, you know, trying to open up 10 connections to each mirror to download all the data. But the idea is that a client, an intelligent client, can better guess what mirror to download from than I can as the server offering the content. That's mostly true, except that I've written all this software to make the intelligent choice as to what server to be using. So it's not exactly a perfect fit, but the format is pretty close to what I need for solving this security concern. I won't really call it a problem yet, but it's just a concern.
So you would include like the SHA-1 for the repo MD?
Yeah, so we'd include the SHA-1 for the repo MD. That's exactly right, and as well as a timestamp, and publish that in a way so that if your mirror is stale by more than a few days, you won't be able to, Yelm won't automatically download content that's stale. Yelm just takes a couple, the Yelm mirrorless thing here just takes a couple of arguments, which is the repository, in this case Fedora-9 is the name of the repository that's in the configuration files, the Yelm repo files, and then the architecture. And there's a few other things you can pass. We know what country each mirror is in. We try and know what country you as a client are in. But every now and again, the GeoIP software gets it wrong. It says, you're in Antarctica, because you're coming through some kind of satellite link, or for whatever reason. Sometimes it gets it wrong. If it gets it wrong, we want the end user to be able to override it. So you can add additional options at the end here, like country equals. So you can specify a list of countries that you want to download content from. You know, if you're in the US, maybe you'd leave it only as US. Only got about 35 mirrors in the US, so really pretty good coverage out of the 150. But if you want, you can also list out the several countries to pull from. We've got the global list, which is, give me all of them, I don't care. In which case you get all of them, all 150 show up. And then, because of, we're doing some interesting things with network blocks, and I'll get to that here on the next slide, we think we know what your address is. We know what the address connecting to the mirrorless server is, certainly. But if for some reason there's some weird proxy thing going on, or at least for my own testing, someone says, you know, I'm over here, this is my address, and it's not working, I'm getting the mirrors in Australia when I really should be getting the mirrors in New York. You can specify an IP address and override the automatic detection, and then you'll get the list for that IP address. So you add that to the end of the query here, and you'll see the mirrors that are served by MIT. So this here is the real heart of the interesting part of Mirror Manager, the algorithm by which we choose what mirrors to send back to you. So off the top, we've got the same network block. So for every mirror, they have the opportunity to list IPv4 network blocks. In one example here, 18000/8, that's the class A designated to MIT. And so the MIT mirrors, plural, would list this network block in their configuration data in the mirror manager database. And then all of the clients that are on that network will be automatically directed to those mirrors. This is something that no one else that I know of does. No other download software does. And we think it's been a real boon for us. The other reason I needed this is because the private mirrors, those inside of companies such as Dell, the mirror isn't publicly available. But I really want to direct all of my users, in my case 143.166, which is the network block for Dell in the US, I want all of my users to get redirected to my local mirrors so they're not going over the wire. Because I can serve them at gigabit speed, and I know it's a lot slower if they have to go over the WAN. So I'll list 143.166/16 in the mirrors for Dell and serve all of my users that way. Again, what this means is no configuration changes are needed on the part of the end user. They just download the Fedora CD, they just go to the website, click download, they install it, they do a Yelm update, they get automatically redirected to the local mirrors because we know where they claim it app locked. Shoot.
On the assumption that someone lied in the previous slide and chose their IP address from your internal net block, it would be up to your repo server to not serve them if it was accessible to the outside?
Yeah, they'd have a real hard time because they can't connect to 10.9 dot something.
But assuming it was on some publicly servable...
Yeah, if it was publicly served, then it would be up to the configuration of the web server to prevent serving users you didn't want to use. But that'd be true because folks could find it manually anyhow. A bunch of folks.
It also facilitates spidering mapping it, queries so that we could find out where your internal infrastructure is so that we leapfrog our future attacks and compromise the internal machine. There's a security overtone on that. Now I know where your mirrors are.
IP-wise.
You know the IP, right, although...
Would it return an internal IP address to me?
Sure, you just said...
It'll return whatever... No, well...
It returns a DNS name.
Yeah,
it returns a DNS name.
Okay.
So if it's mapped to an internal address or an external address, that's up to you. In my case, they're mapped to internals. So you'd be hard-pressed to get in through that way.
What if someone had a dynamic IP address and used, like, a DynDNS service?
Yeah. So again, DynDNS, because we return a name, it's up to your DynDNS provider with Chaz, like a 5-minute timeout in or refresh or TTL on the entry to take care of that. It's mirror manager doesn't care. You can use a DynDNS. That's winds up being a DNS problem.
I think the question is actually, how do you, you know, so your network mapped behind a dynamic IP address, that's going to have a IP address going out as you are going to see it from mirror management, I'm sure.
Yes.
That it's going to vary.
Yes. Okay, we don't handle that.
This is actually a relatively common problem and why this mechanism doesn't work for a lot of private.
How about that? If you're running a private mirror behind DynDNS, you can edit your configuration files. Okay, technically you can update the website to change your net blocks. In fact, you can probably even do that through the XML RPC API that we've got, but I haven't tried.
Just for the sake of people who are interested in doing it, I personally return an address that's externally and internally addressable, but I use split DNS to return different addresses to my internal clients than I do to external clients. So if an external client looks up my proxy server, they get my external proxy server's IP address for peering. But if my internal clients look it up, they actually get one of my internal proxy servers, not the external proxy server. So I'm returning different DNS data to internal and external clients on an IP level, which prevents the security issues of external clients knowing the internal IP mapping.
Right.
So,
right.
Which is fairly simple to do in bind or
split
tiny those. DNS or anything.
Yeah. Split domain binds, sure.
Yeah. One thing you may want to consider doing is to simply support the DynDNS.org protocol for updating and mapping, which is a very simple HTTP GET transaction.
Right. So we've got an XML RPC interface that is used by one program right now called Report Mirror. We'll talk about that. I think that I built into that the ability to update the IPs and the network blocks. I know I put it in at one point, and then no one was using it, so I removed it again, just on the grounds that no one was using it. But it would be pretty trivial to add back in. And Report Mirror is kind of another thing that we do that's a little different than most people. Let me get to that here in just a second. We'll come back to that. One thing we added in during spring break this year was Internet 2 detection. So a lot of Fedora users are, surprise, parts of academic institutions or somehow associated with them. And academic institutions tend to have really, especially here in the US, really, really fast network connections on Internet 2. We've actually got, 11 tier 1 mirrors set up right now, of which 10 are connected via Internet 2. So we can get the content out to our Internet 2 users over Internet 2 at, you know, gigabit or 10 gigabit speeds in some cases, which is, you know, heck of a lot nicer than, you know, 10 megabits. In fact, the only folks, the only one of our tier ones not on Internet 2 are our esteemed colleagues here in the room with kernel.org.
We're working on it.
Thank you.
We got one of our sites on Internet 2. Give us a break.
Two of them. Yeah, the two in Europe are on, but the two in the U.S. aren't. So, anyhow.
I don't think ISC knows
that. Huh?
I don't think ISC knows that.
Yeah, ISC does. Yeah, feel free to point that out to them. But so the problem was, I didn't know, as a just Joe Random Network person, how to know who was on Internet 2 and who wasn't. And luckily, one of our Mirror admins said, well, I'm on Internet 2, and oh, by the way, did you know that they published their BGP routing tables? Oh? Yeah, and you can download them every couple hours and update your mapping. Sweet. So, we do that. So, every couple hours, we download the BGP routing tables for all the Internet 2 connected hosts, which only show Internet 2 connected. Internet 2 and NCREN and GNET in Europe and CA. Red Iris in Spain and
CANET.
Yep. So all of these, you know, National Lambda Rail NLR, all of these very high speed research and educational networks have, you know, are all published into the same BGP routing tables.
Yes.
So we grab that, and now we know where people are, and we redirect folks over Internet 2 if we can. I say same country because it still doesn't make any sense if you're in Argentina to be connecting to a Japanese mirror that just also happens to be on Internet 2. It's still probably faster to be going to a South American mirror than to across the Pacific. So we do try and keep it to within the same country at this point. Same country. Shoot.
Where would I go for that list?
I'll be happy to show you.
Excellent.
It's published.
It's published. So
Internet 2 said?
It's a, yeah.
What is Internet 2?
Internet 2 is a research and educational network that the schools, universities, and some large corporations are connected to. It typically runs gigabit pipes between the schools and their points of presence. So
it's supposed to be minimum gigabit.
Huh?
It's supposed to be minimum gigabit connectivity.
So it says minimum gigabit. I'm not sure that's true because I actually looked at moving to North Dakota last year, and I think it was only 100 megabit connection from Chicago to University of North Dakota at the time. Maybe that's changed.
It hasn't always been gigabit.
Huh?
Yeah,
major because North Dakota.
It's Internet 1.9.
Yeah. We're getting there.
Yeah, I mean it's scaled over the years. It's not,
yeah.
It wasn't gigabit.
Yeah. The well, and I know for a fact that the links from Internet 2 to South America and Brazil are 155 megabit. Is all, but which is one of the reasons we don't want all of those users coming back up across there. Because in fact, that's the fastest way for us to get content to the mirrors, but 155 megabits really doesn't go very far when you've got an entire continent you're trying to connect over it. So we're trying to be a little sensitive to things like that. So we know from GeoIP, so MaxMind is a company that publishes a free database updated monthly of GeoIP mapping of IP addresses to the country that you're in. That's really the only part that we care about. They've got some other data. You can get as granular as cities. We don't use that today because the mapping, there is no clean overlay of a network topology to a geographic topology. You know, if I want to connect to Dell, which is 4 miles across town from my house, my connection goes through Atlanta and Dallas before coming back to me. Doesn't make any sense, but that's the actual overlay. So we just do it within a single country as opposed to trying to be any more granular than that. And then same continents. In the event that you're in a continent that has no, or in a country that has no local mirror, we'll give you the mirrors on the same continent. Luckily, I think we've got one mirror on every continent by now, at least. Africa, we might only have a couple. Egypt's got a couple now.
Where's your man Antarctica?
Huh?
Where's your man?
Yeah, Antarctica. All right, you got me there. Antarctica looks like a satellite link to us, so. So we'll give you the same continents, and that really has helped to keep the traffic from going across the transcontinental links. That's nice. And then global. So in the event that you are somewhere like Antarctica, where we really have no idea who or where you are or what to do, we'll just give you the whole list. Don't know what else to do. At that point, Yum will go, and we do some randomization. So for each of these individual groupings, we will randomize the list, so we don't always give you the list in a particular order. This lets us do some crude form of load balancing. Another bit that we added here very recently was instead of just a true randomization, you had two servers offering in the same network block, but one was gigabit connected and one was only 10 megabit connected. We know we have bandwidth numbers that you can put into the database. And we will do a probabilistic randomization so that you are most likely to be given the gigabit connected link first and less likely to be given the 10 megabit link first. I say less likely. For example, in India, this is really important. We've got four or five mirrors in India. One that has a 45 megabit T3 line, thank you very much, and four that have DSL lines. And if we did it just a straight random order, then a lot of the time people would be hitting the DSL connections, and only 1/5 of the time would people be hitting the 45 megabit connection. They say, wow, this is really, really slow. How come this is so slow? I'd be better off if I changed my configuration files, typed it in to always point to the fast mirror. So because we know how much bandwidth is available, we can do this probabilistic sort on the list. And so it is random. You will eventually or sometimes be given the slow mirror, but for the most part, the slow mirrors are way at the bottom of the list. And so you'll never hit them. In practice, kernel.org serves a couple gigabits here in the US. And so they are significantly more likely to serve content than tummy.com that serves at only 16 megabits. Since implementing that, no one has complained to me that they kept hitting Tummy three times a day and their downloads are really slow.
Given the chaos of inbound connections, wouldn't it be simpler to return a sequential list? 15 copies of the high bandwidth, 2 copies of the low bandwidth in that order returned and looped back through the list repeatedly? Since a random person is connecting, you've randomized the list automatically?
That would have required changes on Yum.
I'm just saving you. I'm saving you valuable random bits on the server. Is all I'm thinking.
Yeah,
it's CPU time.
It hasn't. I've gotten lucky. It hasn't been a problem, okay. And it meant I didn't have to change Yum and all the users of it. Yeah, much happier to make changes in one place if I can. And that way, I can come here and tell you all about that new feature. Because when I gave this talk at Red Hat Summit a couple weeks ago, we didn't have that feature. I was looking for somebody in the audience to volunteer. No one did. So I broke down and wrote it. How am I doing on time? My watch died here.
Quarter till.
Okay. Real quickly, if you want to set up your own mirror, you're going to want between 200 gigabytes and a terabyte of disk space. You're going to want as fast a connection as you can afford. And you need to put some information into the Mirror Manager database. You just set up an account in the Fedora account system, then you can create an entry in the Mirror Manager database, fill it all out, please be truthful, and about an hour later, everything starts getting redirected to you appropriately. Now, if you try adding the net block of, say, the entire internet at your mirror, it's not going to let you do that. So IPv6, we're happy to serve content and list mirrors that serve IPv6. None of the Fedora infrastructure today has IPv6, so inbound client connections, we don't know that you've got IPv6. So you can add all the netblock information you like for V4 and V6, and Mirror Manager will handle that just fine. But in reality, all of our decision making is done in V4 right now. Great question. We also love public mirrors. We love public mirrors, especially in countries that aren't the United States, or even Europe. The next slide's got a map. We've got great coverage in Europe, great coverage in the United States, not so great in other parts of the world. So if you happen to know somebody who has a few extra machines and really big pipes in anywhere in Africa, or South America, or Russia, please come talk to me. I'd be happy to help get that set up. If you're on Internet 2 or one of the research or educational networks, that's even better, because then you get to use all that bandwidth at almost no cost to you. And what do you get for being a public mirror? Well, you get a little bit of publicity. On the listed, on the mirror list page, you can have the name of your organization and a link to your organization's webpage. It's not much, but it's something. It's a little bit of a thank you to folks who are serving public users. So the software that we did all this in, I kind of mentioned at the beginning, is Python. Python's a great language. I've really enjoyed learning it. And we're using the TurboGears web framework. There's a number of web application frameworks out there. And for a lot of the things that we wanted to do, like the web pages are all rendered in, and the database backend is all done via TurboGears. But TurboGears wound up being really, really slow for operations. We return mirrorless right now in about 3/10 of a second. If we were actually hitting the database via TurboGears for every user request, we still wouldn't have gotten Fedora 8 out the door. So we don't do that. So we actually cache all the data in a look-aside that is not TurboGears. But all the back end, the database, and the web page are all TurboGears. So that's cool. We do mod Python, very straightforward. We do some static files, which the mirror list, the public list, which just has the links to all the mirrors available, that's all just flat HTML files, pretty boring. Database, we've got a web crawler that will go through all of our mirrors to know what content each one has. We hope that they're not lying to us. But if a mirror gets out of date or becomes unreachable, then we will remove them from the list. We'll stop handing them to users for a while. When they recover, then we'll add them back in. And then we've got this thing, I mentioned this report mirror script. This is a bit that users, mirror admins run after they rsync to upload their rsync contents back to the database. So now they tell us what they have. That way the crawler will come around, and I call this trust but verify. You tell us what you have, thank you, and then the crawler comes around and verifies that you have what you said you had, and the two work in balance to keep the list correct. If you've got a public mirror that the crawler can't reach because it's inside of a company, report mirror is the only way that I have to know what content you have. So I don't send Fedora Core 6 users in your company at your mirror if you're not carrying Fedora Core 6 on your mirror anymore. That's our maps. So all the red dots show where the mirrors are. You see we've got great coverage in the US, we've got great coverage across Europe. China, yeah, I think it's got one, maybe two mirrors now. Brazil, so really, really sparse in South America, really, really sparse in Africa. And could certainly use some more in China. The coast of Australia is actually doing pretty well. And then where all of these users are coming from. And this was taken back in right after the Fedora 9 release in May. See, a lot of users in the US, a lot of users in Europe, and then a few scattering of dots throughout the rest of the world.
Mauritius looks proportionately large, disproportionately large on that.
I'm sorry?
The island of Mauritius looks disproportionately large in terms of how many people are coming from. If the people don't know where Mauritius is, look to the east of Madagascar.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is all GeoIP returned locations. So if we think that your IP address is on a ship in the South Pacific, then that's where we're going to put your dot on the map. Whether or not it's
so many uses there.
Yeah, whether or not it's is exactly geographically accurate, we leave up to the kind folks at MaxMind.
This one guy with a really dynamic IP.
It's Bill Gates' yacht. He's running Fedora.
That's right. That's right. Sean.
I have one question regarding Koji, are you going to implement any sort of static Koji mirroring?
So the question is, are we going to implement any static Koji mirroring?
Do we have this?
No.
This is all for developers. This is
no.
all for users, but.
This is all for users. No, I have no plans to add Koji. I know we're running out of time, but there's a few things that we would like to do. Going to add this Metalink support I mentioned, because that's going to be our way to get rid of a couple of the security concerns. It just happens to be convenient. Push mirroring, we don't do push mirroring today, it's all pull. What we want to get to is when we change content on the master, we inform the tier ones, they sync, then they inform the tier twos, they sync. We don't do that today. Everybody just rsyncs whenever they choose to, and it's really pretty ugly. Just need somebody to sit down and fix that, make everybody go do it right. When a mirror drops out, some mirror admins would like to be told that so they can go figure out why. Most of the time it's because their mirror has become unreachable. They've hit connection limits in FTP, for example. So want to do that. Exactly to Sean's point, we really only have a concept of a single master at this point. And this has hurt us when we tried to add secondary architectures. Sean asked if we could start mirroring other content like Koji and offer to tell people where to go download Koji content. We really need to add another layer of what is the master server and then the directory tree. That winds up being more work than I was able to do in one night. So I've got a Yum branch for it, or a Git branch for it, but I have not finished that work. And a couple other things to take a priority now. And then the secondaries really have a challenge. Secondary architectures don't necessarily use the same source RPMs as the primary architectures. They use most of the same, so of the 6,000 source RPMs, 5,990 are the same, but 10 are different. And we don't know that. So right now, if you're running a secondary architecture, you will be given the source code for the primary architecture. Not ideal. We should be able to fix that. So that's what we're doing. If anybody would like to add some code to implement any of these, please come talk to me. And thank you very much.